all the way from Baltimore, Maryland. Please welcome Anil Lewis and his banquet address.
Let me start, excuse me, regret from Frederick Abono. Again, he can only be in one place at one time, but his loss is my gain. I really enjoyed this weekend. It's been some very interesting presentations and some good conversation. It is a pleasure to kind of be here with Bonnie Lucas. Again, she already talked about us meeting in Georgia and who'd have thought then that she'd be running an affiliate, but I think that that is pretty cool. I appreciate, you know, the kind words she said about me and the impact that I've had, but I think that we all share that, right? Individuals interact with one another, really not knowing what impact we'll have. So we have to be very conscious about that in a way that kind of helps us get past any problems that people may be having. So I'd like to take just a little bit of time to share a story that I haven't shared in a lot of groups. Normally, like I said, when I go do a banquet address, it's really kind of recapping some of the more powerful engagements I've had. But just hearing some of the tone here, especially with Rick saying he's coming back on board and, you know, with some new people talking about this is their first time in elected office and that type. I think it's important to understand. And Bonnie, you know, when she was saying that, you know, we're a small affiliate and talking about the consolidation of the Fairbanks chapter, I think it's important to understand that everybody doesn't get the Federation. I almost did not get the Federation. I lost my sight in 1989 due to red mastigmatosis, and I could tell that story, and you can read about that story. And I found the Federation in a real way in 1999 when I became a chapter president. What many people don't know is the time between that time. I mean, I shared this maybe one other convention at their banquet speech, but I'll share it with you. In 89, when I went blind, I got some services from a traditional center, and for lack of a better word, they really gave me the big head. They provided me some fundamental services that gave me mediocre skills at best, and they made me think that I was an amazing blind person. I was reading 33 words per minute, and they thought, well, they made me think that that was just phenomenal because adults weren't supposed to learn to read Braille. I had some really fundamental skills with a cane that allowed me to travel on routes, but not dynamically in where I wanted to go. My access technology skills were probably my strength, but as a result of that, it was probably one of my biggest barriers because I was thinking I could do everything just through technology and didn't have to learn those other fundamental skills. My home management skills, I didn't get any training at all because they thought that I didn't. But yet and still, even with that, they had me thinking I was the best thing in blindness since Stevie Wonder, without the musical talent. I was out on the speaker circuit and I was out there, you know, raising money for the center that gave me the training. And I think I shared once before how at one point I went to one of the presentations and the lady, I was like the number one requested speaker for the United Way. And I went in and she was already crying, saying, I hope you're not going to make us cry. And up until then, I did kind of play to people's sympathy, you know, to raise money for the organization, but I didn't want it. And at that point, I think I realized I did not want to be the pitiful blind. So around that same time, I went to my first national convention. And this is the story that I've only recently begun to start sharing. 1995, didn't really know the Federation. I was doing job placement. Again, they had me thinking I was the best thing that happened to blindness. And I went there thinking I could learn a little bit because I heard of this organization. It had some really good job programs, job opportunities for blind and some other strategies around Social Security. And I wanted to learn how to do those things so that I can do my job better. I went into the general session. Maybe you know how it's laid out. If you haven't, we lay it out much like a political convention and the states are all gathered in the same space. So there's signs. So I went to the sign that said Georgia. And I sat in that chair that had the sign that said Georgia. Maybe who've been to convention and understand the significance of that are already saying, uh-oh. So I sat in that chair and then someone came along and they said, you know, you can't sit there. I'm like, well, I'm from Georgia. You can't sit there. No, how are you? Who are you? How do you do? None of that. You can't sit there. So I got up and I moved to the Hawaii delegation, which was just behind George. And luckily they had the aloha spirit and they made me feel welcome. So I offered that many times we lose people because of protocol. When I say protocol, maybe you may not know, the chair that has the sign is where the delegate sits. And a lot of people think that it's a seat of honor. And it's really not. It's a seat of responsibility. The person who sits in that chair is supposed to be ready and able to deal with any problems that may need to be addressed by that affiliate delegate. The national president can't go around looking for the delegate here willy-nilly. Every affiliate is supposed to have someone positioned there at that sign to do the work of the Federation. So should I have sat in that seat given that protocol? No. But no one bothered to explain that to me. They just told me I couldn't sit there. I didn't feel welcome. And you can best believe that that already kind of reinforced what I've heard about this militant, unwelcoming organization. I did stay. I really loved the bagpipes and I saw the power power of the organization when it erupted, when the gavel came down, and that still attracted me. But no one told me about a banquet or a banquet speech, so I left the conference before the banquet speech, never went. I regret that. So I left there thinking, no, this was not going to be something for me. The convention was life-changing because it showed me the potential and the capacity of other blind people, so I bought into that. But being a part of that organization, no. And I went to work subsequently as a counselor for the Georgia Client Assistance Program, and in that, I was helping advocate for consumers to get services from VR, and I would go to some of the state conventions of both the ACB and the NFB because I was working for an agency, and I had to make sure that blind people were aware of the services that we provided. And I remember going to this NFB convention. Well, I'll offer to you just for what it's worth. I remember going to the council convention, and it's really interesting because they spent a whole lot of time bashing the NFB, which was really interesting to me. And I'll offer to you when I went to the NFB convention that the ACB never came up. It was really in stark contrast. So at the NFB convention, they did more bashing of me. I remember presenting about the client assistance program, and I would have to go into more dynamics around the relationship that I had with some of the local leaders at the time, which we, thank God, we resolved over time. That's a banquet speech B. But I was presenting on the client assistance program, and I was soliciting questions from the audience after my presentation. And there was somebody at the head table that just kept asking questions. They were good questions. Strong, solid question that if I wasn't on my game, probably would have shook me up. But I said, sir, I appreciate, you know, you asking questions, but I really would like to try to take some more from the audience. And the more I solicited questions from the audience, the more this guy kept asking me questions. And eventually my time was up. So I felt that I did a pretty good job. The guy, by the way, at the head table was Mark Maurer. I didn't know who Mark Maurer was. The president of the National Federation of the Blind right there at the table drilling me. But either way, I didn't take to it well. And then as a result, well, I'll add this piece of the story. Once I finished, the then president of the organization of this local affiliate says, well, thank you, Anil, for coming, but we realize that the client assistance program is just ineffective. Which again, now made me even more offended hearing this. You're probably saying, how did Anil ever even turn the corner? But I remember going up after the break, and I went up and I confronted the affiliate president at the time, and got no real justice. And I went back to my hotel room, you know, getting ready to pack up because I was going to call it a day. I was thinking about staying for the rest of the convention, but I was about to just say no. And had I done that, I would not be sitting here today talking to you. That would have been a fairly definitive decision. And I don't know if I would have been covered. But just before I did, came a knock on my door, and there was a young lady who said, you know, Dr. Maurer would like to see you. So I'm thinking in my mind, he's about to try to tell me that I was inappropriate for my actions, you know, during the break. But those who know me know that I'm not afraid of confrontation. I'm like, bring it on. Yeah, I'll go see this man. And I went back to the convention hall, and Dr. Maurer and I sat next to each other. And he just shared with me, and he asked questions about me, real questions, you know, not superficial stuff. He really wanted to know about me, my family, how I got to where I was. And we shared. We you know, talked about what note takers we were using at the time. He interjected some questions about philosophy and that kind of thing. I came later to find out that the reason, and if you know Dr. Maurer, you know this is true, the reason that he was drilling me is he was testing my mettle. He's always trying to find that next blind person to really bring into the organization, you know, to find that person with the skill set and talent that the organization can use to make it possible for blind people to live the lives they want. And when he sat there and he talked to me in the convention hall, he was still exploring whether I, you know, had any potential to be of benefit to the NFB. And subsequent after that, he actually flew me to the national office, and I met his family. Broke bread with he and his family. He took me around to the old Action Fund building, and we had a discussion there, and he started asking me all of these unorthodox questions. I didn't have any idea of what he was trying to get at. He was interviewing me. He subsequently offered me a job to come work at the national office. That caught me by surprise. And unfortunately, at that particular time, I was dealing with a divorce. My mom had just been recently diagnosed with cancer. My son and I had moved back in with her because I was thinking she was going to help me take care of him as I was dealing with the divorce, because I knew I was going to have to fight for custody, you know. And I knew that if I was in a household and I was able to convince the courts that, no, I had a sighted person available. But then she soon got diagnosed with multiple myeloma. So now I'm the single father and of a toddler and a caretaker of my mother. And I don't know what made me do it, but I called Dr. Maurer. And he spent, I don't know, I mean, he only knew me from that experience that we had. But he spent more than an hour. I think I told people 45 minutes, but I think it must have been more than an hour. At least it felt that way. And I just told him what was going on. And he shared with me, you know, because again, being a single father as a blind person is nothing I ever expected to do. And I was afraid that I wasn't going to be able to do it well. He shared with me how he, as a blind father, was able to take care of his children. Had a really dramatic experience with his son, David, which I'll leave for him to share when he chooses to. But it reinforced to me that I could be a single father and be able to take care of him. And then he talked to me about my concerns with my mom. And he talked about some of the things that I would probably need to make sure I did in order to be a good caretaker and that kind of thing. And I left reassured that, yeah, I was not going to be putting my mother at risk, that I was going to be able to be a strong caretaker. But the real strong part, it wasn't being able to take care of my son. It was whether I would be able to get access or custody of him. My wife at the time wasn't in a good place. She was dealing with some demons. She didn't have a job. She wasn't in a secure state. And I knew I was the best custodial parent for my son. But I knew if it went to the courts that regardless of where she was, all the courts would see is a blind man. It's already hard enough as a black man in this country with a custody battle, getting custody of a child, but a blind black man? Oh my God. But Dr. Maurer gave me so much peace by saying that if it came to that, well, let me tell you the true advice he gave me. He told me that I should do all that's possible to work with her as a mature adult to make sure that we took the child in consideration first, because, you know, when you're going through a divorce, the last thing you are is civil. But he said I had to focus on what's best for Amara, and I had to get her to focus on what's best for him as well. And he told me if I did that, then it wouldn't be an issue. But if it came to it, he reassured me that I would have the support of the National Federation of the Blind. I was done. I mean, at that particular point, I'm good. Knowing that if it came to it, I would have the power of an organization that I had come to understand really was able to do what I thought was undoable, gave me a sense of confidence to move forward in a way that was mature. And luckily, I was able to talk with her, and she was able to make the right decision. And I did end up getting full custody of my son. He's 23 years old now. He's graduated college with his degree in psychology. Found out that he had an unknown talent of playing music by ear, and he's out now producing music. And when he came to me after he graduated college with a psychology degree, I said, all right, now let's go to grad school. And he says, Dad, I don't know if I want to go to grad school. You know, this music is really what my passion has come to be. And I'm a non-traditional student, and you can read about that too. But I told him, I said, you know, I'm good. School's always going to be there. You can chase this dream. I'm going to support this dream, but you're going to have to pay your bills. So don't come to me and say, Dad, can you give me some food money or some gas money? No, but if you need some equipment or something like that, I'm going to support that. And he just recently had some producers fly him to New York, where he's been doing something that I think is going to be released sometime near the end of this month. So I'm proud of him. But he is who he is, not solely because of me. He is who he is because the Federation is what it is. He grew up in the Federation. I remember the conventions that we hosted in 2004 and 2007 when I was affiliate president. He was there. He was a toddler at the time, but I had a number of Federation members that were willing to make sure they were babysitting him while I had to go do the work during the day. So many examples of how the Federation has really just helped fill in all those gaps of my life. And that's why I wanted to, and I'm glad Bonnie gave me the opportunity to not only talk about the pledge, but talk about the true heart of the organization. And that's why I'd like to leave that with you. And I've seen that exemplified through just even the subtle piece that I pointed out around the election and the expressed commitment of wanting to come back home that Rick expressed, and just the dedication of all the members that chipped in to make this virtual convention happen. It didn't happen because people saw it as a job. It happened because people have love for the organization. It didn't happen because anybody's getting paid to do this. It happened because people recognize that by using their time and their talent to execute this convention and to do the work of the Federation, you're helping people like me. And I have the ultimate responsibility of paying that forward. The investment that the National Federation has made in me in so many different ways, I know I will never be able to repay. But I find joy in every opportunity I get to repay it. And that's why I mean it sincerely. The value statement of the National Federation of the Blind speaks to my heart. I am filled with hope, energy, and love by participating in the National Federation of the Blind. Because every day my expectations are raised, I know my contributions make a difference to myself and to others. And I just thoroughly enjoy celebrating all of our accomplishments with my Federation family. Thank you guys for letting me enjoy the weekend with you. Hopefully I gave as much as I have gotten. And always rest assured that you can count on me. So feel free to call. And I hope that you recognize that I will also be counting on you. Thank you for your time and attention. Love all of you. Take care.